afternoon. Which is probably as clever an ad-lib as you're going to get out of me all day. Welcome to the Bill Williams Show. This is where you're supposed... Thank you. I must confess that I signal for the applause because looking at it pretty dispassionately, when a guy gets on the air and says, good afternoon, this is the Bill Williams Show, how cleverly can you say good afternoon? That is a matter of fact, how cleverly can you say Bill Williams? My name is Bill Williams, which isn't particularly exciting news, but a guy has to have a moniker, and that's mine. This rather capricious clam bake we're about to indulge in is a program that we're throwing together, and I use those words advisedly, in the afternoon at KNX. I am, you should pardon the expression, a recent import from New York City, so that some of these call letters of the stations out here are completely foreign and alien to me. Back east, which an expression I'm sure you've heard too much of. Back east, all the stations start with W, and out here they all start with K. So if at times I lapse into a W or a liquid L, your forgiveness, please. The show itself is supposedly spontaneous. I don't know what that means, but you must admit it adds a lot of class to the program. The program is spontaneous. We have guest stars, and we pass among the people and talk to people. Just before we went on the air, we warmed the audience over. You allowed to end a sentence with a preposition? We warmed the audience up. That's much worse. And we're going to talk to a few people. First of all, I said before that I liked your hat, and I'm very serious. I do. It's very pretty.
Well, thank you.
Who are you?
I'm Mrs. Marty from Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake City, Utah. Mm-hmm. I told you that I come from a suburb of Salt Lake City.
Yes.
Syracuse, New York.
That's our suburb.
Well, it's a pretty far removed suburb, but... And what are you laughing at?
Nothing.
That's true. That's probably the most apt critique of the show I've ever heard. Who are you?
Margot Monroe.
Margot Monroe?
Mm-hmm.
That's a very charming name. It sounds, I may be absolutely wrong on this, but it sounds slightly like a theatrical name. Are you in the theater?
No.
You'll have to get in line not to be in the theater. A few more shows like this and I won't be in radio. It would be funnier if I were kidding. Are you from UCLA?
No, I'm not.
You're very pretty.
Thank you.
So are you.
I should have an ad-lib for that, but I don't know. Thank you very much. The reason I asked if you were from UCLA, as I said, I'm a stranger here. Sounds like a title for a motion picture. I'm a stranger here. And I was walking down, what is this place, Sunset Boulevard? Thank you, Max. Sunset Boulevard, and a very pretty girl walked by with one of these college sweaters on, and, you know, trying to meet people. I walked over and I said, have a cigarette? She said, I beg your pardon, I'm a UCLA girl. I said, I'm sorry, have a cigar. I understand you, young lady, work for a rival network.
Yes, I did.
I like the way you pass that tense. You work for, name escapes me at the moment.
NBC.
Sacrilege. What did you do at NBC? As a matter of fact, what does anybody do at NBC?
That's a good question.
I'm glad you said that, too.
Yes, I worked as a secretary to the directors in the television division.
In the television division?
Yes.
I see. And now you're not working there anymore.
No, I'm not.
Would it be corny if I said it was the wisest move you ever made?
Well,
yeah, I guess it would. You moved.
I know all the answers.
No, I don't, honey. I don't even know any of the questions. You moved from the NBC television outfit, huh?
Yes, I did.
Having seen some of the television directors, and you're a secretary, as I said, it's a good idea to keep moving. As a matter of fact, looking at this audience, I think I'd better begin moving. No, every once in a while you look at an audience and they look like they're going to form a posse and come up and get you. Stranger things have happened. Let's walk down among the audience. Again, is that correct English? Do you walk down among an audience? You know, I'm used to reading tea leaves when I pass among people, so if I suddenly say that you were from Flushing, Long Island, and you're about 64 years old, right?
About that.
Really? May I tell you something? I'm always being kidded about having horn-rimmed glasses, you know. I wonder if you've ever been kidded about the fact that your hair is beginning to recede a little.
Oh, I've been kidded more than once about that. But that's all right. A little kidding makes one feel good.
Voltaire.
Yes, makes one feel good.
No, I figure maybe that expression was from Voltaire.
No.
You're from Flushing, Long Island.
Flushing, Long Island.
That's on Long Island.
Oh, naturally.
Brilliant dialogue like this you get on no other program, I might add. I was going to say about the hair thing, I wouldn't worry about it because... Oh, you're an artist, too. Don Least, we've mentioned every other network, I guess, except CBS. What is this Don Lee station?
Well, she's an attendant there. I drove her there.
She's an attendant? What does she do, park cars? She gave you tickets?
Yes.
I've had the same trouble with the cops on Sunset Boulevard.
Well, this fellow over here plays in Hollywood parts.
He plays in Hollywood parts, I see. I was going to say about your hair, sir, I wouldn't worry about it because, no... Really, I have perfected a brand new thing. It doesn't grow hair, but it shrinks your head to fit whatever hair you have left.
I need a little shrinkage of hair.
No, I'm glad about the kidding about the horn-rimmed glasses, though, because if you notice, there's a whole new type of matinee idol. Russell Knipe, I think, is a prime example of it. He's a guy with horn-rimmed glasses and the crew cut. Big new thing. The guy in Chicago, Dave Gassaway. Garraway, I'm sorry. Garraway. Dave Garraway. Perfectly normal mistake. Dave Garraway. He does the horn-rimmed glasses thing in Robert Q. Lewis in New York. Well, it's a good idea. Ladies and gentlemen, we have guests scattered among you. Turn around and who knows, you may bump into Lana. Not Lana Turner, Lana Schwartz. She's an old friend of mine. I figured we'd have a drop in. Back in the rear of the room... Having heard the show in New York, that's the wisest move he ever made. He stays far away from it. Is a guy who is an orchestra leader, a raconteur. Would you repeat what? Raconteur, that's from the French, meaning no smoking. A television star out here and a real wonderful all-around guy. What's his name? Frank Duvall. Ladies and gentlemen, a warm welcome for Mr. Frank Duvall. Mr. Duvall, if you'll seat yourself at yonder microphone.
Time for a beanie with this outfit.
We have arranged a table and a microphone right at the head of the stage in front of the audience, going by the old show business axiom that if you're going to talk to people, let them come and get you. Blues.
I'm the stationary one in this moving...
First of all, let's get rid of the usual formalities. You're an orchestra leader.
Yes, yeah, I guess I am. I don't know. I'm trying to get rid of that now. But
Really? Why?
Oh, yeah. Well, I want to be an actor now.
You want to be an actor?
I got a few laps with a pair of big shoes, and now I'm off to the races.
That's peculiar to your whole species of orchestra leaders. I mean, the big shoes thing.
Yeah, well, that's right, I guess.
I like your tie.
Thank you.
Is
one of my wife's old belts. Oh, it's the Western influence, you know. I think Walter O'Keefe, who has a show of sorts around here, has started manufacturing these ties, and I lost a bet, and I have to help him out, I guess.
It's sort of an off-the-shoulder tie.
Yeah. It's not quite as off as yours, but it's...
Frank, I understand that you like foreign cars.
Well, I do, yes.
In fact, you own one.
Yeah, I've had one now for about 5 years.
And it's, what do they call them, Triumphs?
Yeah, it's not too well known out here. I think there are only a half a dozen out here. Phil Harris has one. And,
name dropper.
Yeah, I know that. Well, this is a closed circuit. What do you want?
All right, well, let's drop a few circuits then. Phil Harris has one?
Yeah, I don't know who else. Some doctor at Catalina and three other guys from Pomona.
From Pomona.
Yeah.
Probably a double play combination for the Cleveland Indians. I was going to ask you, you mentioned Phil Harris. Now he'll know I'm in town. I haven't called him.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. This is what is known as being a name dropper, too.
I see. You know Alice?
Alice who?
Alice Schwartz. There's no relation.
Go out live with an orchestra leader. You're busy doing TV out here.
Yeah, we have a show every Sunday on a rival network. Well, rival, I should say. It's not a network, so it's a local station. But we have a lot of fun on it. It's called KTLA, as long as we only have about 90 people here that are going to spoil things for CBS.
Have we got 90 people here?
Well, I'm counting my wife back there and Joel Preston and a few other friends.
Oh, all right. 90 people.
But we're on every Sunday night for Acme Beer, 9 o'clock. I don't know how many of you people have seen it. You see, it's a great show.
Well, no, no, it could be that people just don't like to raise their hands this late in the day.
Well, some people don't have television sets, you know.
Talking about not having television sets, I must tell you a story. You say, why don't you, Bill?
Why don't you, Bill?
All right, I will. I must tell you a story about a friend of mine who owned a bar over here on... I'm trying to make this local, so I don't know some of the... Yeah. La Cienega Boulevard?
That's good.
Good. On La Cienega Boulevard, and this guy couldn't afford a television set. He was losing all of his bar business because people like to go into bars and watch TV now. And finally, about 3 weeks ago, he had a big sign out, big unveiling tonight, brand new television set. And we all knew he couldn't afford one, so we gathered around that night wondering what he'd come up with. At about 9 o'clock that night, everybody's standing at the bar. And back of the bar, he's got this big canvas covering what we imagine to be the television set. Promptly at 9 o'clock, pull the canvas aside. Wasn't really a television set, but he had a big orange crate with a plate glass window, and inside he had two midgets with wrestling trunks. Pretty ridiculous, huh?
Yeah.
So is the story.
I like it. I thought you were going to tell the... I thought you were going to tell about...
No, that. I wasn't.
No, that was... it wouldn't have gone anyway.
No, I see that. No. Got to stay in the business, huh?
Yeah. How do you like it out here, besides after being in the Embers? Weren't things so hot there or what?
Well, the Embers, I must explain, was a nightclub in New York City. And I worked out of there. And I think
yeah,
I can...
Yeah, you worked your way out clear out to here.
I sure did. No, as a matter of fact, I came to California with innumerable requests, mostly from the people in New York, to get out of here. I had heard so much about L.A. and its environs, about the fact that there are nothing out here but beautiful women and sunshine. That, mm-hmm. for example, if you want a grape, you pick it off a vine. You want an orange, you pick it off
a
tree. Pick it off what?
Hollywood and vines.
Yeah. Or if you want a tomato, you call her up. Loused
up
the gag.
Good. Huh? I'm sorry.
Well...
But you know, you won't have... The food out here is, if I may say this at the risk of being a bad guy,
yeah.
is not quite as good as it is in New York, and especially at the Embers. I know you're through there, but I can tell you this frankly now that I had wonderful food there.
I didn't want to tell you, but one of the guys listening up in the closed circuit room...
Yeah?
Owns the Encore.
Owns the Encore?
A restaurant here.
Oh, I see. That's where you're going? Right after this?
Well...
For dinner, that is.
No, right after this, I'm thinking seriously of packing my grip and going to, where is it, San Fernando?
Well, that's where I live. If you meant stay with me, that's out. I have two children, that's
no, it. No, that's all right, Frank. I understand. Anybody in the audience want to ask Mr. Duvall any questions? Ask him anything except something like, what do you think of the Iranian situation? Or why don't you shut up?
If they do that, I'll have to go into a buried grave. Of course, they know nothing about that.
Questions like that we can't take. But anybody got any questions they'd like to ask an orchestra leader?
Yeah, I'd like to know.
Well, just a second, sir. Wait till we give you the microphone. Who are you?
Leo Schultz of Hollywood. I'd like to know if Mr. Duvall is going to open up a Dinah Shore and Marguerite fighting in September.
We're going to start on the Jack Smith Dinah Shore Ginny Sims show. August 27th, Miss Sims has taken the place of Margaret Whiting, who decided she wanted to do theaters and personal appearances.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Sounds a little like the town hall meeting of the year. Really?
Well, any information, you know.
Anybody else got any questions? I have a few questions I'd like to ask him, but I can't ask him on the air. All right, Mr. Duvall, I want you to know that it's been a pleasure having you. And man and boy, I've seen you grow up as an orchestra leader.
Well, that's wonderful, and I certainly hope we see you out here for many years, Mr. Allen.
Frank Duvall, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Frank. Wonderful guy. Real wonderful guy. Usually at this part in any particular program, they have a sponsor, but, I won't hesitate about it. We just plain don't have any sponsors. What are you going to do? Things like that happen. I will tell you, though, that if you've listened to radio, if you've got the courage and the inclination, I'd like to do something for you, which they do in radio, usually on a sponsored show. I'm sure a lot of you listen to private detectives on radio. Have you ever heard Private Eyes on the air?
I've heard some of them.
Who's your favorite private eye?
Oh, let's see. Sam Spade?
Sam Spade and Martin Kane. They go as an entry. Sam usually goes with blinkers on, but... Well, as long as you've listened to them, if you don't mind, I have listened to them very carefully, and I've noticed that all of those guys usually talk in analogies, and they're usually kind of hard, so that a typical program might run something like this. We could use a background music, but we don't have it, so we'll just do it without the background music. Which is kind of clever, I suppose. I don't know. The private eye usually comes on. The guy says, we'd like to present Bulldog Drummond's brother, Cocker Spaniel. In my kind of ragged baby, there are just two kinds of people, dead and alive. In my kind of ragged, it doesn't pay to ask questions. Of course, this makes it kind of tough to find out anything, but just the other day, I was talking to my friend, the fire commissioner. I said, what do you say, commish? He says, no smoking. That's why I like to call this case, gentlemen who prefer blondes never live to regret it. This particular case opens when I'm pulling down Sunset Strip in my convertible with a coat collar turned up, and the rain is coming down like rain. I was wetted in the audience in a Margaret O'Brien movie. Little beads of perspiration stood out on my forehead, so I picked them off, strung them, and put them in my pocket. Ava loved beads. Too bad she was dead. I pull up to this beautiful mansion in the Hollywood Hills, and as I walk, my footsteps on the gravel sound like Baron Leone walking through a bowl of Rice Krispies. There's a dog lying out in front, and he growls at me like I'm an umpire and he's Leo DeRocher. I look at the dog. It is Leo DeRocher. Only smaller. I go inside, and it's dark and creepy. I feel like a guy about to go in a tunnel of love with his mother-in-law. It's then that I notice a spot on the rug. And just to show you the way a private eye can really deduce things real smart-like, upon real close inspection, I discover that the spot on the rug is a guy's body. He's got 10 bullet holes in his think conch, a rope around his neck, a dagger in his back, and he smells of prussic acid. He's dead. And that's why I'd like to tell you how I ended the case, but it so happened that I ended the case ending a case, so I couldn't sober up in time. But I will leave you with this thought from Voltaire, that people in glass houses should never throw parties. I think that's what he said. That's the way private eyes function, for better or worse. This microphone is very interesting, isn't it? Yes, it is. We have a galaxy of luminaries. You allowed to say that on the air? Yeah, I guess you are. A galaxy of luminaries here in the audience. First of all, you, sir, who are you?
Isso Ellsworth from Paris, France.
Are you really from Paris, France? My hometown. Well, again, a pretty far removed suburb, but what can you do? You're here in the States? How long?
3 years.
3 years. What did you do in Paris?
Kansas City, Missouri.
That's a good town to come from. No, who was the first described Kansas City as a far-flung city, but they didn't fling it far enough?
I don't know. Who was?
Somebody from Minneapolis.
Sounds good.
Sounds good? Kansas City, you have a slight southern accent, too.
Well, I can't help it.
All right.
You all.
You all. I love the cowlick in you. You have the same thing that I have, except mine goes right down to my nose. The cowlick, I mean.
What?
Cowlick. That's an old French expression meaning cowlick. It's something to do with your head. I don't know what it means, but you're supposed to throw things like this in. It makes the program warm. As I was saying, comedy writers are a much unappreciated group. We have such a gentleman in our crowd today, and possibly after his appearance, he'll be even more unappreciated. This guy writes a program for CBS. Thank goodness we finally got somebody on CBS. A program called My Friend Irma, and I'm sure if you give him a wondrous welcome... Not yet. A wondrous welcome, he may wend his way microphone-ward and spout many gems of comedy. Ladies and gentlemen, from the My Friend Irma show, Mr. Stanley Adams. Mr. Adams. Mr. Adams looks a little in his clothes and get up like Lee Cobb.
Well, thank you. I've been told I look like Vincent Price.
You've been told you look like whom?
Well, my mother keeps telling me I look like Vincent Price. Vincent Price, the actor.
What does Mr. Price keep telling you look like?
I look like
Yeah, well.
Yes, well.
I know how you feel. Is it true that most comedy writers have a serious vein and that they would really love to turn out drama?
Well, as a matter of fact, I did start writing by writing suspense. My first two shows were suspense shows. This is about 9 years ago.
Really?
Back in New York, yes.
I didn't know that.
Well, thank you.
No, I've known you for so long, I never knew that you delved into the drama.
Well, I kind of like it. It's a lot of fun writing the drama because you don't have to go for a joke every other line, you know?
What do you do when you're writing comedy and you sit at your typewriter and nothing comes forth funny?
You kill yourself.
No, seriously, it must be a tremendous problem to week after week realize that you have to turn out a half-hour show which will be heard by countless millions, and which is supposedly a very funny show, and it is, really, sincerely.
Well, thank you.
How do you turn it out when nothing comes forth?
Bill, when you write a show like Irma, the characters are so defined, each one of them, that it isn't hard to picture in words what they would say or react to in a given situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like Al, you know, the con man, the phony. You know exactly what he's going to do when somebody comes up to him and says, hey, you got $10, you know?
No, nobody's ever come up and asked me for $10. They know my work.
Well, perhaps this isn't the right analogy, but when you define characters, this is the basic important thing in the script, is get your characters so well-defined that you know exactly how they're going to react to a situation, and then it's real tough. That's when the work comes in.
Have you ever wanted to become a comedian yourself? I've seen you work at private parties. That sounds kind of ridiculous. I've seen you work at private parties, and you're a very funny guy. And most comedy writers, when they get away from their typewriter or from churning out comedy, are usually kind of sour and, as a matter of fact, kind of sullen people. They aren't about to let loose with comedy unless they get paid for it. But you're a tremendous extrovert and a great performer.
Say,
I don't know what I said again, but again, it adds dignity to the program.
Well, actually, I think most comedy writers, it's sort of a big frustration with them, you know, because if you can't be a comedian, you associate yourself with them, you write for them. Everything you write, you'd like to say yourself. But unfortunately, few of us have the potential to be a comedian or a comic.
Uh-huh. Something just struck me.
Yeah.
Don't leave the room.
Uh-huh.
Remember we had Frank Duvall, he's sitting in the control room now, we had Frank Duvall on the program. I want to show you, I talked about Frank's melodic genius and his wonderful way with music. I just want to prove to you that this guy is a tremendous musician. We have a piano over here. And I'm gonna play something, and Frank will show you exactly his background and how well-versed he is with music. Frank, you listening? All right. Let me get over the piano here. I used to play piano, but I played in a small nightclub in New York about 4 o'clock one morning. The reason I quit, about 4 o'clock one morning, we caught a guy stealing into the club. We figured it was a burglar, but it was Mr. Steinway coming in to scratch his name off the piano. So. Now, Mr. Duvall, listening? All right. Now, listen. Now, this is what amazes me about this guy. What opera is that from?
Aida.
You're right. See? Brilliant. Aida. He knew. What were you asking me?
Well, I thought that was very interesting. I'm going to write. Do you mind if I use that in one of our shows, Frank?
Sure. Incidentally, copies of Mr. Duvall's address may be had by writing to the station.
I would rather you use me in one of your shows.
Oh, I understand that Frank makes nothing but loot out here. And well, after... go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, Frank's a very fine performer. As a matter of fact, I've seen you a great deal, Frank, and I've always liked your performance, especially on Pantomime Quiz. You remember Frank on Pantomime Quiz, anybody? Great, wasn't it? Real great.
Don't coax my audience.
Of course, there was another guy by the name of Hans Conried.
Vincent Price, which is what you're leading up to.
That's right. Vincent was wonderful. As far as Frank's work, as I said, he makes a lot of money, but I think it was you who first told me this, that money doesn't mean anything, that money can't buy you health or happiness.
Of course not. Money is, it's ridiculous.
We're talking about Confederate money.
Yeah.
Stan, tell you what I'm going to do. just to show you how much I appreciate your coming on the show. Usually, they give the guest a prize.
A Whitnow watch or something.
No, couldn't afford a Whitnow watch exactly, but we have backstage a 5-pound box of mustache wax.
Oh.
Now, this sounds kind of stupid, doesn't it? But you'll never know, 5 o'clock some morning, somebody will call you up and say, Dan, I need 5 pounds of mustache wax, and there you are.
That happened yesterday.
Who was the guy who called you?
Mr. Paley, I think it was.
Mr. whom?
Mr. Paley, CBS.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Paley, yeah. Send him the mustache wax. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks, Dan. Stanley Adams of My Friend Irma fame. I am getting the nod from our director. You think we ought to wind it up? 5 more minutes? All right, we got 5 more minutes. Anybody got anything interesting they want to beef about or something? You have. You're hungry? So's this show, honey. What would you like to eat?
Chicken. Fried chicken.
You've come to the right program. Funny you should mention fried chicken, because I've also appeared on radio under the name of the Mystery Chef. How do you make fried chicken?
You put it in the frying pan and fry it. You know, turn the gas on.
You put it in the frying pan and fry it?
Well, how do you make fried chicken in Syracuse? That's how we make it in Rochester.
Are you from Rochester?
Yeah.
My hometown.
My hometown, too.
Well, I don't know how they made fried chicken in Syracuse, because I was a college man myself, and I don't remember that we ever had fried chicken. Being a college man, you know, we had nothing but old professors and so forth. I'd like you to know, incidentally, in winding up this program, that I didn't do this program for nothing. As a matter of fact, we already have made out the check for me this afternoon. You know, when you go into the accounting department at any, whether it's a radio outfit or any business concern, you go in the accounting department, they always take something out for withholding tax, for pension fund, for the laundress, and, you know, stuff like that. Well, it ended up with everything taken out. They gave me a check here at CBS for 1 penny. Seriously, a check was made out to Bill Williams for 1 penny. And I was kind of ill at ease when I went across the street to the Bank of America, but I took it in. I did. I took it in, and I handed it to the teller. I figured I'd get some sort of wisecrack from him, but nothing. He took it very matter-of-factly, and all he said was, how do you have it, heads or tails? That's silly. What's new with you?
Nothing. I'm on my way home.
You're on your way home?
Uh-huh.
And you stopped in?
Mm-hmm. Stopped in.
Glad you did.
I'm glad, too.
Why?
Well, I like...
This is what is known as fishing for a compliment.
Well, I just wanted to see a show.
Oh. You hadn't heard that I was going to be in town?
No, I hadn't heard.
You'll have to get in line not to have heard it, because nobody has. Where do you live?
Kansas City.
And you just stopped in?
Uh-huh. I'm on my way home.
This'll do it. I'm sure you've heard the old story about the three producers, the Hollywood producers, who have their limousine chauffeur-driven car driven up to their home in Beverly Hills, and the three of them decide they're going to go to New York. And as they start to get in, one gets behind the wheel, and the other two are deciding how to sit. One guy says, well, I'd better sit on the outside because I'm getting off at 50th Street and Broadway. That's a ridiculous story. In retelling, it loses a lot of its flavor. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been For Better or Worse, Richer or Poorer. I now pronounce you man of microphone, the Bill Williams Show. We had interviews, and we passed amongst the people. Anybody here before we go has something tremendously interesting to say? Because Lord knows I haven't. You're supposed to end the program with a brilliant philosophical dissertation. I'd like to leave you with a brilliant thought. Well, man, I can't think of any. That guy in the control room looks like Gil Lamb. Oh, he's a guide here. And how about a good joke? Not on this program. No. Thank you very much for being a very wonderful audience and bearing with me. And don't leave yet. After the program, I'll tell you what happens. Well, no, I guess I've been in that. Thank you very much for being a very wonderful audience. This has been a closed-circuit audition. We hope you've liked it. We hope particularly that you've liked our guests who've been most magnanimous in appearing on the show. I love the way this kid flings words around. Magnanimous. That's from the old Latin. Most magnanimous in appearing. If we ever go on the air, I wish you'd come back because you're the type of audience that's much easier to work to than dead people. You are. We would like to thank our orchestra for not appearing on the show. The gentleman in the control room with the brilliantly colored, multicolored shirt is our director. His name is Dave Vail. After this show, he probably figures he better be directing traffic. No, he directed the show. And do we have anybody? We had Frank DeVore and Stanley Adams. We would like to thank the guide who looks like Gil Lamb. In fact, we'd like to thank Gil Lamb. Just before we go off, final closing thing. I had a telegram just before I went on this thing from Lana Turner. Would you repeat that?
I didn't.
Oh, somebody whistled.
Back there.
Sir. We had a telegram from Lana Turner, and she assured us that if she's within 50 miles of this program, it'll be a complete surprise to her because she intends to stay completely away from it. But who knows? Again, many thanks. My name is Williams, and we'll see you again soon. Thank you.